Welcome to the podcast series, Intel on AI. Each episode explores human-centric topics related to artificial intelligence through conversations with leaders in the field. I'm your host, Abigail Hing Nguyen. I'm thrilled to have two people with me today, my guest host and colleague, Amir Khosrowshahi, Vice President at Intel Capital, and our guest, Doug Robel, two-time Academy SciTech Award winner, a TED Talk speaker, and the head of Digital Domains Research Team on Art and Tech for Feature Films and Other Media. Amir and Doug, thank you for joining me today. Can you each give us a brief introduction so our guests can hear your voices?
Well, my name is Doug Robel. I'm the head of software R&D at Digital Domain. I've been working at this company since 1993, actually. I joined the company when it was brand new and I found a place. I've been working there writing software so that artists can do visual effects ever since and just having a great time doing it.
Awesome. Amir?
Hi, Abby. So I work in Intel's corporate venture capital arm. It's called ICAP. And I came to Intel in 2016 through the acquisition of my AI startup, Nervana. I have a background in machine learning and neuroscience, and I'm very eager to talk to Doug.
Amir has some background with computer vision, which I'm looking forward to drawing from in a bit. So I wanted to clarify for our guests that neither Amir or Doug are virtual. They are real and not AI generated. So Doug, you are probably one of the most famous digital models out there. And when you walk around, do people recognize you on the streets?
Not yet. I have had one sort of, hey, I saw your TED Talk moment at an airport once where somebody just said, hey, I saw your TED Talk. It was sort of my peak fame at this point. But in visual effects, a lot of people know my face. It's weird.
Well, I'm very excited to hear more about your work at Digital Domain. Your work there has featured in over 100 films. A lot of these are my own favorites, like Benjamin Button, Beauty and the Beast, The Avengers. And we could talk for hours about all these movies. Today, I thought what we could do is start with a digital character who's a favorite of both Amir's and mine, Thanos from The Avengers Infinity War. And then move into the grand AI challenges that Digital Domain is tackling in creating virtual humans that people think are real. So Thanos is played by Josh Brolin, but he's entirely CG, computer graphics. Can you talk about how Digital Domain used machine learning and AI to deliver his performance, specifically in the areas of emotive performance?
So way back in 2008, we started experimenting with trying to create photorealistic digital humans. We did this movie called The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. We developed some technology for this, and we used it to fully replace Brad Pitt for the first 45 minutes of that movie. And it worked. It actually worked. It was really scary, actually, because The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is not a visual effects movie. It's an intimate drama of this guy living his life backwards. And we were charged to sort of age Brad Pitt backwards. So the first 45 minutes of the movie, when you see him, it's not him. It is a digital character that looks like Brad Pitt on a small person's body because he's aging backwards and growing up. We were very scared about this movie. If you noticed that he wasn't real, if he was a digital character, it would take you out of the movie. It would be like, oh, that's an effect. What do I care about this? But for 45 minutes, audiences accepted that what they were seeing was somehow they found somebody who looked like an old version of Brad Pitt who was small. So with that success, we set off on a big adventure. We started to really push the technology to create photorealistic digital humans for film. And we did a lot of other films. Some of them worked, some didn't work quite as well, but we got better and better and better. Finally, in 2016, I think, Marvel came to us and they noticed what we were doing and basically said, okay, we've got this character, Thanos, in The Avengers. He is the bad guy, but he is also going on an emotional journey as well. We can't just have him be evil. He's got to have this motivation. We have to see all the skill that Josh Brolin, who's playing Thanos, could bring to the character. And we sat down and we thought, okay, we got to take it up a notch. And luckily, about 2014, I had read this really cool paper about using machine learning to accelerate fluid simulation. This has nothing to do with Thanos' face, but I saw the power of machine learning and what it could do for just about anything. So we had started exploring using machine learning for various things, and we realized that facial motion, the performance of an actor, we could actually learn how Josh Brolin's face moves and teach something that if Josh Brolin moves his face in one way, it moves Thanos' face in the same way. This is really cool because up until that point, a lot of times artists, they're making what appeared on the camera when the performer was performing. They're taking the performance and translating it onto a character. What we were trying to do was take Josh Brolin's performance and directly move it onto Thanos. So every little piece of Josh Brolin, actors are good, right? Actors know what to do to tell a story.
You chose them for a reason.
That's amazing. And so we wanted to preserve exactly what Josh Brolin was doing with his face, but put it on this big blue guy who was way different looking than Josh. And that's where machine learning came in. And we really were like, okay, we can't physics this. What we have to do is teach something.
What do you think was the hardest part? What was the hardest problem that you had to solve in making that work?
Well, with all machine learning problems, it's the what kind of data you needed and how to formulate the data so that it translates over there. So imagine, if you will, and this is a podcast, so there's no visuals. So we'll put some links to some cool videos in the notes. So Josh Brolin is on set. He's interacting with other actors and things are exploding around him and all sorts of stuff is going on. He is wearing a motion capture suit to do traditional motion capture for his body motion. But he's also wearing a bicycle helmet with a camera that's on a stick that's pointing at his face. And on his face are a whole bunch of dots. Now, we use dots. And right now, you know, you can use your iPhone. You can point your iPhone at it and animate an emoji. But that for movie sets is not acceptable. It's very sensitive to the amount of light. It doesn't give the quality that we want. And if we put about 150 dots on the face, it gives us some landmarks to really tell what the face is doing. But you think and you go, well, wait a second. 150 dots, that doesn't capture what everybody's face does. That's actually pretty small. And if you look at it, there aren't that many dots on his face. So what we had to do is figure out if all we can get is 150 dots, how do we translate this into this living, breathing, fleshy motion of the face where the polygonal mesh that represents Thanos' face has, I think, 60 to 80,000 triangles in it. So you've got this amazing order of magnitude difference between these dots and the final output of Thanos' face. So the hardest part was, how do we get the data that tells us how Josh Brolin's face moves? And how do we create the data that tells us how Thanos' face moves? And then how do we plug them all together? So that was actually a lot of hardest parts.
Wow. Would you say that those judgment calls were more technical or artistic?
It's a combination of both. For instance, the number of polygons that we use to represent the final character's face are very much artistic. We look at how the character is going to be rendered, basically what the character needs to be able to do with their face. And you need to keep piling in all the detail, because that's one of the key things. If you really want to convince somebody who's watching a movie or whatever that what they're watching is actually real, you need detail. It's all about the detail. You look at a video game and the faces are smooth and they don't move with the fidelity of real people. And so what we wanted to do is increase the detail of the structure of the face so that if you looked at a still, you'd be like, wow, that looks pretty amazing. And then also the detail in the motion. How does he actually move? So when he makes a smile, it isn't just the final pose of his smile. It's how his mouth got into the smile, right? You actually have this transition. And all this stuff is extraordinarily nonlinear. Linear means you're going from one point to the other on a line. If you make a smile and you watch the points on your face, you know, pick a little pore or something and follow that, it does not do a straight line. It has this path that it takes to go through there. And that's one of the cool things about machine learning, is that machine learning is really good with nonlinear things. So that's why this was sort of a natural, it was the way to do it.
So you're working on some very difficult machine learning to simulate fluid simulation more quickly, and the technical details seem very challenging. I want to step back and ask you about, you've been in this area for a long time. There was this one thread with Pixar where they seem to focus mostly on storytelling and not on effects, that the story and the artistry is paramount. And with digital domain, it seems that the actual effects and the accuracy and the likeness of your simulations is paramount. However, you are a natural born storyteller, so it's in contrast to your engineering. Can you comment on that?
Well, first of all, it's the nature of the business. Pixar and DreamWorks and these animation companies, they do everything. They tell the story, they try to make it look as beautiful as they possibly can, but even the look of the movie is in service of the story. Digital Domain and ILM and Weta and all the other visual effects companies out there are visual effects people. They're part of this enormous group of people that make movies. So a production company like Disney or Paramount comes to us and says, hey, we've got this movie that we want to make. We've got a director. We've got the script. We've got some actors assigned to it. And we want to talk to you about creating this effect or these effects for this movie to fill in those bits. Well, what we bring to the table is we have some really cool tools. We have some amazing artists who can do those effects, and then we can make them look amazing. What we don't bring to the table is, hey, we liked your script, but we think we have some notes. We'd like to change it. And if you added this extra character here, it would be a much better story. No, that's not our point. Ours is to make it look beautiful. The director and the writer and the movie makers are telling the story. We are illustrating the story. We are making it look like something you've never seen before. So if the movie we work on is good or bad, that's hopefully not our fault. What we are concentrating on is making it look as good as it possibly can.
Again, you've been in this area for a very long time, and you've seen remarkable change in the algorithms, in the artistry, and the visual effects, the sound, everything. Can you tell us a little bit about what you anticipate is going to be exciting in the near and far future in your space? What should we expect to see that's going to blow our socks off?
Well, so I've been in the business for nearly 30 years, which is a little weird. It's been a series of transitions. So when I first got to Digital Domain, we had this enormous building that was filled with people who made models. We worked on Titanic, and for Titanic, we built some enormous models of that ship. We had like three models. The biggest one was like 40 feet long, and we had to rent out this airplane hangar to handle the size of this model. And it was just so much fun. Here I am, a software geek, typing away in my cubicle, and I could go over to the model shop and watch what they're building. And, you know, they're banging hammers and sawing things and creating these amazing things. Well, that was cool because that was the way it was done. But the name of our company is Digital Domain. And over a decade, the 90s and into the 2000s, kind of put those guys out of business. Making models in movies just rarely happens nowadays. It's actually cheaper and more flexible and more amazing to create it digitally. And in fact, I know a lot of model makers who learned some tools so that they could do what they like to do, which is create things that look amazing in the computer instead of actually with their hands. So that was one transition. Then through the 2000s, we were all about physics and math. That's exactly what visual effects is all about. It's trying to predict how the real world works so that we can change it. So that's where I was doing a lot of computer fluid simulation and computer vision, trying to understand the world. And any kind of character animation that we were doing, we were trying to use finite element methods to figure out how the muscles move. That continued about until the mid 2010s, and machine learning started coming in. And that's the next big transition that is still very much in progress right now, is we're starting to look at, instead of trying to come up with an equation that lets us figure out how something behaves, well, sometimes that's hard. Why not just measure it? We have all these people who know how to create things and film things and record things. We're actually really good at creating data. Why don't we leverage that and start modeling things based on how it actually works? And so this is hitting our industry like by storm. If you look at a renderer, the final part of the renderer is a machine learning denoising step where it has looked at how images should look like and how renderers produce images. And it basically straightens out the image as its final step. It says, okay, the renderer didn't quite sample this area enough. I've seen enough images that were before and after. I'll just fix that. So this is affecting every single aspect of our industry. We're looking at fluid simulation using machine learning. Computer vision has all been taken over by the machine learning techniques, where it used to be old school computer vision, like optical flow. Optical flow, I love optical flow, and there are some great algorithms for optical flow. They've all been supplanted by machine learning augmented optical flow algorithms. This is happening through our industry, and it's fun to be involved and watch it happen.
It's been really fun for me to watch as well. Doug, this is a really great segue to some of the really amazing work that you've been doing. And Amir and I got to see a preview last week when we spoke about the virtual humans, particularly, is it DigiDoug? Is that the name of your avatar?
Yes, DigiDoug.
Well, so it's incredibly difficult to make a realistic human. And actually, I thought maybe I would have Amir kind of give us a little sense of that, because it's something I know you've talked about. Amir, like, what is so hard, Amir, about making a human that we believe is real?
Well, so I studied visual neuroscience, and there's many experiments in neuroscience and psychophysics where you find that humans are extremely attuned to certain things, and especially to faces. There seems to be even a face area in your brain, and it's very hard to generate digital simulated faces to fool a human. So it's an incredible challenge, and it can be very bizarre. If you show pictures of individuals that a person would know, but then show them upside down, they may not recognize them. It's that finely tuned to faces. So it is a challenge, and it's very well known in neuroscience. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. And so Digital Domain's tackling this. Doug, this is your big challenge. Can you talk to us about what that looks like right now, where you are in the process?
Indeed. A long time ago, I was reading about child development. And when a baby is born, their visual system is actually very limited. When a baby is first developing, all it can see is about 4 feet away from it, which is a little bit more than the distance of your mother's face when she's holding you in your arms. So as you are developing your visual system and your brain is starting to, you know, grow, all you're looking at right now are faces. Your brain is so good at faces, and that's why it's such a difficult problem. And I totally agree with Amir, it's really hard. That leads us into our journey into real-time faces and trying to create realistic digital humans that not only live in movies, but could interact with you on the computer, you know, anywhere. And along the way, just trying to get better and better at doing it. After Thanos, we realized that we had put together a system that by looking at certain parts of Josh Brolin's face, it could automatically transition that motion of his face into Thanos. And we had gotten relatively adept with some machine learning techniques. At the same time, remember this is 2016, a lot of image-based machine learning stuff was coming along. This is where you're seeing the beginnings of deep fake. You're seeing ResNets showing up, doing image classification. You're uploading a photograph to Google, and it's telling you who's in the photograph. All sorts of amazing machine learning image processing is coming around. In the Thanos case, we were trying to figure out how to transition from dots on Josh Brolin's face to Josh Brolin's face to Thanos. We thought, okay, it's just mapping dots to Thanos's face. What if we could map the image of Josh Brolin to Thanos' face? And you know, how far can we go with this? And that's where we realized that, yeah, this actually works. It doesn't need all that much information, and it runs really, really, really fast. It takes a while to train, but who cares? We'll train it once and then it runs in a couple of milliseconds. So we thought, wait a sec, computer graphics cards from NVIDIA and AMD, all these amazing cards are coming out that are making it possible to render things so it looks really good. They're doing subsurface scattering. They're handling a bunch of polygons. We can get a lot of detail out of this in real time. Maybe we could actually create digital characters like this. So that's what we did. And that's what led to the TED Talk. We then took all the technology that we developed for the movies and just spent about a year trying to make it as real time as possible. And also not rely on dots. The dots are great and they're a lovely crutch for movies because explosions are going off. But in a real world situation, what we just wanted was a consistent lighting on the face. So we transitioned what we used for Thanos to a bicycle helmet with a single camera and some lights to make sure the lighting stayed a little bit consistent. And then we just took a single image, black and white, of my face and ran it through a complicated machine learning process, and it animated my face. And this was also kind of scary because we set off a goal where we wanted to be able to stand next to me, where people could actually see what I looked like, and then compare it directly to what my character looked like. And if you've seen the TED video, you can actually see me standing next to it.
It's pretty close. I definitely encourage everyone to go watch this TED Talk.
Yeah. It's hard to make a digital human that fools people, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
So you're mostly been focused on vision and visual effects. And I know now that you have your interactive persona, your namesake, DigiDoug, that the character has to do basic things like recognize speech and also do utterances, but also it seems to have some rudimentary natural language processing and understanding. What have you found different about the stuff that's not in the visual domain? Is it different in character to you? Is it interesting? Have there been many surprises?
Well, right off the bat, one of the big surprises is the amount of data you need in order to get these things to actually work. We thought, hey, we generated a lot of data to go from me to my digital double. We needed to generate a lot more data for all the other stuff. So what Amir is talking about is in the TED Talk and some other things, we had me in a motion capture suit with a helmet and a camera looking at my face, and I was controlling a digital version of myself that looked like me and was doing exactly what I was doing with my face. So let's see, our lag is about, we got it down to around 13 milliseconds. So when I move, the digital character moves about 13 milliseconds later, which is pretty good. After we did that, we thought, hey, this is a great tool. This is really cool. We can use this to do live performances, stage stuff. We can do amazing things with digital characters now. And we can use it for movies. We can really take advantage of this in movie situations. But we wanted to go further. Now that we had a digital version of me, that we wanted to make it look more like me. And we also wanted to make it move without needing me in a suit. Because the suit is fun, but it's awfully tight because it's a motion capture suit. And, you know, getting in that suit's kind of annoying. By the way, there's some really cool machine learning techniques to look at a video of a person and automatically figure out what that person is doing with their body. But the quality of those things is not quite ready for this yet. We're waiting for that to be developed. So we started on this about in the spring of 2019, and now it's October in 2020. So we've been working on this for about a year and a half. And over that time, if you've been watching the research and what's happening in machine learning and AI, so much stuff has been going on. There's been amazing advances in speech recognition and speech synthesis and chatbot technology where chatbot doesn't even cover it. It's conversational AI is happening now. And we thought, you know what? There's enough technology out there and we can leverage off this so that we could actually drive this character by itself. So that's what we did. We formed a team with not nearly as much expertise as we should have had, started saying, hey, what if we put a speech recognition program in here And then we took the speech recognition program, sent the results to the chatbot. Well, the chatbot's not going to do it because that's going to be pretty scripted. So we then started looking at conversational AI. And then we started looking at, well, if we've created a character that looks like Doug, we need to make him sound like Doug. So we need to have voice synthesis that sounds like Doug, but it has to run really fast. Remember, we have a budget. We want this to be running at well over 30 frames a second. So the voice synthesis has to sound like me, but it also has to be generated very, very rapidly. And then, oh, by the way, we want it not just to be a robot. We want it to be emotive. So we started looking at natural language processing, where we're looking at what people say to the character and what we're telling the character to say, so that the character changes its expression and also changes how the voice sounds when he says things. And then we had to be able to have this character see, so that if somebody walks up to him in a kiosk or calls him on Zoom, we wanted to be able to determine if he knew that person before. Oh, and we also had to figure out how to handle memory. And memory in conversational AI is one of the hardest, trickiest problems there is right now. And we still had to make him look good.
How many people do you think it's going to take to make this one digital human work?
Well, our team is a group of really talented software developers and artists. We have basically two teams. In North America, we have about 7 software developers. In Taiwan, we also have a group of 6 software developers that are working on all aspects of this. And then we have an amazing pool of artists in North America that are tweaking everything to make it look as good as possible. So that's another 6 to 8 people. So I guess around 20.
It's a manageable size. I think it's like 300 plus to make a movie in general. And this is much harder problem to solve. And speaking of movies, when do you think we'll have a virtual human that we can direct on a screen?
Well, that's the eventual goal, right? That's one of the holy grails. First of all, the memory problem has to be solved. When you tell a character to walk over there, open the door, and then be afraid of the monster, this character needs to embody everything else that had happened up there. So did the character know that there was a monster behind the door? Does the character know where the door is? When you say, open the door, if I'm an actor, I know that I'm going to open the door behind me. But if I'm a digital character, I'm like, wait, there are 2 doors in this room. Which one do you mean? So there's so much semantics and just basic text analysis. And the amazing thing is people are making enormous progress on this. The problem is, to actually do it, you're kind of solving the AI problem, right? Right now, we are not solving the AI problem. We are using machine learning, which is a subset of AI, to do a lot of cool things. But our character is not artificially intelligent. Yeah, it's going to be a while.
Yeah, it's a good long while.
Yeah.
So, Doug, I'd like to ask you a question about the tools that you use and the hardware and the environment and the UI and what your artists have to deal with. A little bit more on the engineering side and a little bit more relevant to Intel. Can you comment on the computational power that is required? You mentioned 13 milliseconds. That's really critical, the lag. Are there any other computational or engineering challenges that you'd like to comment on?
Sure. So just some basics about this. We're a PyTorch house. So we like PyTorch, but we will use any machine learning framework. Obviously, we're shooting for really high bars with our digital characters. We're trying to take what we can do in a movie and do it in 30 frames a second or 33 milliseconds. So we are using a lot of GPU. For our character right now, we're using one decent RTX card from NVIDIA to do the rendering. All the rendering is being done in the Unreal game engine. Then we're using 2 other graphics cards. One for just simply running the conversational AI. The models that we're using have billions of parameters, so they fill up a graphics card quite nicely. Thank you very much. And then the other graphics card is running the speech recognition and how the character moves its face. We actually call that speech face, where it takes the speech, the sentiment analysis, and determines what the expression of the character should do on this frame. All of that needs to be coordinated in a great big framework. Now, there are some cool frameworks coming out. We started this before those frameworks were available, so we have rolled our own. We have a message passing framework that's connecting all this stuff up. And you can imagine what's going on. You know, we're getting the sound from the computer. That's going over to the computer that has the graphics card that's doing the speech recognition. That gets sent to the GPU that's doing the chatbot to figure out what the response should be. And then it goes into speech phase to make the character actually move. And then this all gets sent back to the original Unreal game engine, where it all gets put together and the character moves in one big shot. Well, we're shooting for 30 frames a second. We would love 60 frames a second. We're not at 60 frames a second. Right now, with a couple of good graphics cards, we can get to 40, 45 frames a second. Oh, and there's one other thing. There's the machine learning that does the final rendering of the face, this neural rendering pass. It's actually in the same graphics card that's doing the speech recognition, but that's more machine learning. So we're filling up some stuff. This will not run on your phone.
So it seems everything is done bespoke for this problem. Do you see your innovations going into your software that you distribute, or do you feel like it's just a new thread that's going to go in its own direction and become its own ecosystem on top of PyTorch and graphics card?
Well, we use what we can that already exists. So Unreal was a natural for us to leverage off of. The artists are working in Maya, and certainly a lot of the image processing and data wrangling, the final step of that is in Nuke. Nuke is a program that Digital Domain actually created way, way back in the early 90s. And then we sold it to a company named The Foundry in England. And now it is sort of the de facto standard for compositing images together in movies. So when you see a movie and you see a character in front of a real background, the real background and the character have been squished together and created that final version of the image in Nuke. It's extraordinarily powerful. It's got a lot of stuff. In fact, they're even adding some really, really neat machine learning stuff to it right now. We use all the tools that we possibly can, because if we don't have to write some software and there's something out there already, we'll use it. But a lot of this right now is so brand new, we had to write our own.
There are a lot of other companies that are starting to move into this space. Like you mentioned, Unreal Engine, Facebook is making their own virtual human, and there's a number of startups as well. What do you think is distinguishing your work from these other competitors?
I mean, right now you've got Apple with animated emojis and the things that will run on your phone. When we first started this, went, nah, that's not where we want to be. We want to start where the movies are. So we were able to create Thanos and other characters that looked amazing at 4K resolution on a big movie screen. We set out for us to try to take that and recreate that inside the real-time engine. So that is really one of our main distinguishing capabilities. We've also built this character so that it is agnostic to what's making it say things. So we are a visual effects company. We're all about the look, how things look and move on screen. We're not a conversational AI company. We are taking advantage of a lot of other people's very, very cool work. But what we'd like to do is make it easy to create a character that could be a photorealistic face on the brain of something. So if some company has something that they want to have a spokesperson for and have that spokesperson be able to interact with the general public, our digital character might actually fit that bill. Facebook is doing some amazing, amazing stuff. But a lot of the really coolest work that Facebook is doing is for communication. The stuff the Oculus team is doing is just gorgeous. And they want to be able to have people wearing virtual reality or augmented reality headsets talking to other people and not being able to tell that those guys are not there. We have been exploring exactly the same space with our technology. So yeah, it's just different approaches to the same problem. Epic is trying to create characters for video games, and we work with Epic all the time on this. As you mentioned, there's eventually the possibility of being able to tell this character what to do. So the technology that we're doing could make video game characters look amazing and also behave more autonomously than you've ever seen in a video game. You play Red Dead Redemption, and you can walk up to a character and talk to them, but you'll very rapidly see that they are doing the same thing over and over again. What if that character actually had a story and
personality?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and I think you guys are doing some work you may have mentioned with like potentially having hotel clerks or folks who work behind the counter at the restaurant. What other applications are you guys looking at?
That's the big thing, right? Is where will this start showing up in the future? When I get to a computer, it's got this layer. And the whole hope here is that if you had a character that behaved human enough and looked human enough, that it would just be natural to talk to that person on a call like this. And in fact, that's one of the coolest things that we've got so far is that our autonomous version of me can be in a Zoom call. He'll just be another person in the Zoom grid of people. And he just sort of hangs out in the background, but then you can start talking to him. And it's not like asking a virtual assistant a question, because while he has virtual assistant capabilities, he also has this conversational stuff. So you can ask him a question and then he'll turn and say, "So how are you doing? What did you have for breakfast this morning?" And he becomes part of the conversation as well. So there's something really tempting.
I was going to say there are many silver linings, the fact that we're all on Zoom now too, that you're able to really put your digital avatar to good use.
Yeah. The fact that everybody is Zooming now, it will accelerate the acceptance of these characters.
You alluded to your personality learning and being able to act. That suggests that you've been doing some work in reinforcement learning. There have been some remarkable results in that space. However, unlike things like GPT-3 and NLP, they haven't had applications outside of very specific areas like autonomous driving. What do you find interesting in the reinforcement learning research space, and where do you anticipate harvesting some of the research for applications in the near term?
First of all, we are actually not using any reinforcement learning other than what's already built into some of these algorithms. We haven't actually developed any. But one of the big problems is, how do we create these characters? For me, it was easy. I did a ton of data capture. I did a lot of motion captures to see how I behaved. But what I want to be able to do is take data from, like, you on a Zoom call and automatically learn how to create a character that looks like you. And this is where reinforcement learning comes in really neatly. It's not going to work all by itself, but reinforcement learning can start creating a character that's, it's like all those very cool reinforcement learning videos where it'll start creating a character that starts to look like you, but then it will compare it with what you actually look like and it will adjust the character so it looks even more like you. And then it's going to learn how to move the character so that it more likely fits you. It's not only just reinforcement learning, but it's this whole online learning where we just don't create the character in one big, long training session. As you start talking to the character, it will start learning how to mimic what you do, but it's not ready yet. So if I've got a famous actor and I am a big corporation who wants that famous actor to be my spokesperson, you could imagine a world where you log in to pay your bill and somebody you know from the movies greets you and says, "Hey, it's time to pay your bill. I remember you from last time," and starts acting like somebody in a movie. That would be pretty cool. It's also getting a lot like the movie Minority Report, too. So I don't know.
And I hear that some of these digital actors are signing with agents now. So it's becoming very real.
Yes, there are digital influencers out there that have started out as just, you know, single image photographs of a digital influencer, but now being animated and showing up at real places. It's a crazy world.
Yeah, there's so many things to be excited about.
So I have some thoughts about your work, Doug, versus one of my favorite production studios, Leica.
Oh, yes.
So Leica does stop motion. So it's almost entirely in the other direction. And they made some of my favorite movies. One of them is Box Trolls. What do you like to see on TV or when you go to see the movies? You may have some strange tastes that are separate from your work.
And so first of all, I got into the movie industry because I love movies. I like all movies, ones with special effects, ones that make me cry. I love watching a really good story being told well. But to get to your question that you asked, think about what happened. We started out where we were building models and filming them. And then we developed all these amazing tools. And there was kind of this promise that the tools were going to be so simple and so easy that anyone could make a movie. And it's true. You see some stuff that shows up on YouTube and the visual effects are amazing. We're getting to a point where actors will be able to use these characters as brand new tools for telling stories. The very first place that you might see these things show up is in pre-visualization. So pre-visualization used to be drawings. The director and a pre-visualization artist would storyboard out the movie, and you'd get this amazing flipbook of what the movie would look like, and the artists are just staggeringly talented. Now, all pre-visualization is done in real-time engines with characters, where you take the character and make them walk, and the director says, no, no, I want that explosion to happen over there. But we're getting to the point where you will be able to have a character where the director just tells the character to walk over to the other side of the set. And the character will look really good. And all of a sudden, you've got this brand new tool to tell the story that you want to be able to tell. And this will open it up to more and more people. Just think of wanting to tell a story and needing to get 30 people together. And you think, oh, geez, that's going to be so much of a hassle. Wait, wait, I can just download 30 people and tell them what to do in my computer. And all of a sudden, I'm telling the story that I want to tell. It's not going to replace actors. Actors are amazing, but it will augment what we can do.
Yeah, that is actually for me one of the most exciting things, the opportunity to democratize filmmaking so that more people can bring their storytelling ideas and characters to life. So there's many, many exciting things here. Thank you so much, Doug, for joining us.
Thank you, Abigail. This was wonderful. I loved talking about this stuff. Thank you very much.
And Amir, thank you for joining me as well.
Thank you, Abigail. Thanks for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.